From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made this past spring when a popular Rochester establishment debuted a new innovation, a meat vending machine. Now, typically the most meat you could ever expect to find in a vending machine is beef jerky. And you usually end up with Pop-Tarts, don't you? But now, suddenly, some of the finest cuts of meat were available in a rotating machine. It was happening at McCann's Local Meats in the South Wedge of Rochester, where owner Kevin McCann and his team prepare some of the most choice cuts anywhere. And the vending machine was one part of McCann's plan to survive the pandemic. Customers didn't have to linger inside. They could pick up their favorite meats and head home. Not ideal, but it was a start. And back in the spring, following temporary shutdowns, life was reopening in a sense. Restaurants were moving customers outside at first, then indoors with some limitations. The spread of the virus slowed during the warmer months. Businesses were hanging in there. And Congress, meanwhile, did almost nothing. Here we are in December, and even the innovative businesses like McCann's don't know if they will survive the winter. We have the conflicting emotions that come with the arrival of the first vaccines, coupled with the closure of popular restaurants and bars across the country. It's happening. Salons and barbershop owners are calling for the state to recognize their own relative safety. And small business owners are wondering if there will be any more assistance or if the Darwinism of a pandemic economy will come for them next. I've invited Kevin McCann to come back on the show to talk about the challenges that his industry faces. It's a look at the small business reality of getting to the pandemic's end line. And now that we are starting to see that it will come in the months to come, it's a question of who gets to get there and survive it. Kevin McCann, owner of McCann's Local Meats, thanks for making the time. Always good to have you.
Always good to be here.
Let's go back to the spring. Give me a sense for what you think you might have warned your December 2020 self had you only known if you go back to the spring. I mean, I'm curious to know if the last 7 to 8 months have gone sort of as you expected.
Well, you know, we were shut down for 10 weeks. And in the course of the last week that we were open and then the following 10 weeks while we were closed, there were several phases that I feel like I went through emotionally. You know, at first, there was a lot of guilt at feeling like I was not living up to our responsibility to the community, to our farmers, by closing. However, you know, there was a number of our employees who were immune compromised and just did not give us an option to stay open due to the heavy burden that would have put on the rest of our staff. So, and in truth, keeping our staff and our customers safe is also a huge responsibility. So at first it was guilt, and then it turned into kind of grief, right? Where I was concerned at losing market share. I was concerned at just, you know, essentially throwing money in the fire and watching it burn away as we were closed and, you know, paying for utilities, paying for our lease, paying for a number of different things when we weren't generating any revenue. And, you know, the grief turned into fear. The fear was somewhat was put on the back burner because we were able to find this idea for the vending machines and get back open. And once we got back open, things felt as close to normal as they had in months. And so that helped. But here we are in the fall and, you know, borderline winter. And man, if things aren't as scary now for small businesses as they've ever been, you know, I know generations in front of us dealt with recessions, depressions, world wars, but as far as I have experienced, this is about as scary a time as I can think of for my business and my family. So,
do you think the non-business owning public understands just how much on a knife's edge we are?
There has to be some level of understanding, right? Because so many people know people who own businesses, and if they don't know the people that own those businesses, they're at least patronizing those businesses and spending some of their money there. And everybody has to see the way that we're all talking about us owners of these small businesses, about how nervous we are, about all of the hardships that we're facing, about all of the sort of confusion around what the rules are, how they're going to be implemented. It's the confusion and concern about where we're going to earn our next customer and our sale so that we can keep our employees, in a job and earning money, and us still buying from our purveyors and still being able to provide that service for our customers.
Are you in the orange zone?
We are, yeah.
What has that meant for you?
Well, that meant initially in yellow, that meant that we had to go to 50% dining capacity indoors. And that was an easier pill to swallow because it was still in the warm months and we could still have our patio. And we had that patio very well distanced. And it was a great way to be able to still service our customers for lunch services. We were, not dependent on any of these color, zones. Our indoor in-person grocery sales can maintain themselves, only put through whatever restrictions that we decide is what is safe for our customers and our staff. But from a restaurant standpoint, when we went to orange, we had to reduce ourselves to, again, only four top, only four seated tables. And that was met with some customer resistance, some people who A, didn't know, B, didn't care. And now, that was in yellow. And now in orange, we cannot have any indoor seating at all. And once again, we're seeing customer resistance to people who either don't know, don't understand, don't care. And furthermore, it means that when a customer can just drive 2 miles down the road and go to an establishment that's open, that they can sit inside because they're not in orange, they're in yellow, that means that we're losing sales, we're losing customers.
Yeah. And I have to be honest with you, Kevin. I mean, I don't have a whole lot of patience for someone who's going to walk into a business of any kind and say, I'm not wearing a mask. It's my freedom. It's my right. I don't have a lot of patience for that. Not anymore. I have more empathy for people who don't feel like this is fair and want to sort of plant a flag and sit down in your establishment. I view it differently. Do you view it differently?
So I think because of the what seems to be a lack of clear thought process that, to justify this system of shutting people down by regions, rather than if you're going to shut it down, just shut it down, right? Like then it's not bad for any one person, it's bad for us all. But if you're going to shut it down in this kind of way, where I guess on paper it makes sense, where it's like we're only going to put punitive action on the areas that seem to be doing the worst and not following, and therefore their numbers are going up. That seems to make sense on paper, but when you think about and I can't speak to every single business model, but if you think about the business model that I own and operate, which is a restaurant and grocery store, if you think about us, restaurants have been open for months. And it has been widely acknowledged that we are not, as a whole, the spreaders of this virus. Yes, there are restaurants that have been, and bars that have been open during these warmer summer months that were just openly not following protocols, right? And those guys are to blame. But by in large, the vast majority of us have been going above and beyond to follow the rules and make sure that we're doing everything that we can to keep not just ourselves and our staff safe, but also our customers.
Talking to Kevin McCann, the owner of McCann's Local Meats. And I think in the summer I was probably over-optimistic, Kevin. I mean, we had a dozen cases a day locally for a while. I mean, it was sort of a dream world compared to now. And I think there was some complacency that probably popped in. I mean, we all knew that the fall and especially the winter could bring a resurgence. We understood that from history. We understood the likelihood or the possibility. But I think it's hard in that moment to feel that that is imminent. And now here we are. And this feels worse than I would have expected or would guessed it would have been. What has it been like for you? Is this worse than you had expected or hoped for? I mean, is this as bad as maybe the worst case scenario?
Well, you know, I tend to be a little bit more of an optimist. My wife, who is the smart one in our relationship, is very much a realist and had been preparing our business for this in January. Because she had an idea based on her family being in South Korea and news that she was paying attention to. She had us as a business, even though we still had to close for 10 weeks, she had us ready. And then when we reopened in June, she had us extra prepared. And I thought that things would take another dip and we would see a second surge in cases. But this is... I exponentially worse than I had anticipated, both in positive tests, in hospitalizations, but also in the effect that all of this had had on businesses. Once again, you've got a very large amount of the workforce in Rochester who are temporarily unemployed or potentially permanently unemployed because of the policies and the implementation of those policies for, you know, how we're going to restrict business.
How many people do you employ?
14.
Mm-hmm. How much has that changed over the last 9 months?
We still employ the exact same amount that we did. There's a couple new faces, a couple old faces gone. But of course, those people were all still unemployed for those 10 weeks that we were closed. There are servers that no longer have workable jobs all across the orange zone right now that are unemployed. You've got cooks that are unemployed because the takeout business for those restaurants does not bring in nearly the amount of covers that they did when the restaurant was even able to operate at such a low capacity. So it's very serious.
In a moment, I want to talk to you about your thoughts regarding the various layers of government, the response of the government at the local level, the state level, and the federal level. I mean, very different things there, and I just want to get your perspective as a business owner as to what you've seen and maybe what you felt like you needed and what has been met and what has not. Before we get there, though, let me just talk a little bit about what's actually happening for you right now. First of all, the vending machine's still there, and it's probably going to be there as long as you're in business, right? I mean, that thing is a massive hit, isn't it?
It is an exciting opportunity for our customers to be able to buy the meats and provisions that they're looking for, even as far as we've recently started putting the pancakes that we do for our brunch service on Saturdays, which are a huge hit. We've started putting the batter in that on Saturdays after we close for people to be able to get as well. And that's been a big hit. So, yes, those are not going anywhere.
What is the vending machine's top seller?
Wow. It's all across the board. It's everything, like I said, from the pancake batter and sliced bacon to sausages, all the way up to the dry aged meats that we put in there. And, you know, when you try to explain to somebody that they can come and buy a $60 dry aged steak out of a vending machine, they kind of look at you like, what? But, at the same time, they're still coming in to buy them.
Are you expecting the same numbers for Christmas and the holidays? Because I think it's important that you remind listeners, for you and for so many of your colleagues in various industries, this month is so important, isn't it?
This month is what gets restaurants to get their books back in black. So many of us operate in the red for so many months, and holiday exuberance and generosity and spending is what really gets us all back to whole. gets us back to where we need to be. And restaurants not being able to have holiday parties for offices, for groups of people, not being able to do those types of things, that's going to crush a lot of places. For us, specifically from a retail perspective, at this point in the year, the number we're at like 1% of the total number of orders that we would normally have at this time of year into Christmas.
What percent you're at right now?
Like 1%. That doesn't mean that the orders are smaller. That just means that we just don't have orders. And maybe that's some last minute planning by our customers, but typically we see the same people every single year, and that understanding of the pre-ordering process, the importance of it for them to be able to get what it is that they want for their holiday meals, has gotten a much more strong understanding from those, city customers. And we're just not seeing it.
Maybe I was naive in hoping that for someone like you and your colleagues in this industry, that for the people who are not going to be ordering in the same way because they're not doing big family gatherings, that's one thing. But then I would think there's a number of people who are saying, well, just the household, we're hanging out together for Christmas. We're not going to travel out of state. We're not going to do big things. But darn it, we're going big with the meat. I kind of thought that might be a mindset. That I confess is probably my mindset. And anyway, I'm not here just to hawk a business, but I do want people to understand what's out there. So I don't know. I mean, I guess you're still taking orders, huh?
We'll take orders all up until the last half hour we're open. I mean, that's just the way that we do it, and we always have. But for us, our mentality is we're still going to provide the best quality of product and the best quality of service that we can give our customers, no matter what. Mm-hmm. Right? We're not giving up on anything. We're not throwing in the towel. We're not doing anything other than acting like we've been here and continuing to put our best effort forward every single day we're here.
Well, so. I know you probably don't want to go there, but let's go here. You're at 1% of typical December sales now, which is a horror show of a situation. It could change, but if you conclude December at 25% of your typical December sales, does McCann's Local Meats survive into 2021?
That's a coin flip. This month, the week of Christmas itself, just the way that the ebb and flow of our numbers go throughout the course of the year, the fall and early winter are just bide your time and wait for it to happen, and then it happens. And if we get to a scenario this year where it doesn't happen, that will seriously put us in jeopardy. So in ways that restaurants right now mm-hmm. have already been experiencing mm-hmm. for quite some time.
Yeah. So the reality is right now there is a chance that McCann's Local Meats does not survive to the end of the pandemic.
I'm not going to count it out. That's for sure.
God. When it comes to what the right conditions are to save certain small businesses, your colleagues in the restaurant industry, bars, et cetera, is it too late for some? I mean, we've obviously already seen some closure, but let's talk about the worst case scenario. Is it too late for some?
I think so. Just because of state mandates and lack of federal congressional support, that is a double whammy that is really putting people at a wild disadvantage. Early on, things like being able to do alcohol to go and, consumer sort of exuberance into you know, supporting local. That was a big thing in March and April and May, right? And there were these strong, you know, campaigns to, you know, order to go and do the curbside and all of these things. And the excitement for that right now is gone. You know, people, I had a customer who came in just 3 days ago, excuse me, it was on Friday, last Friday, so a couple days ago, and they didn't realize that we were in an orange zone, and they wanted to, the man and his wife wanted to sit down and have a hamburger and fries. And when I said that we could absolutely do that for them and send it with them to go, they explained that they were from SOTUS and that by the time they made it back to SOTUS that it was going to be cold and soggy and not as exciting. So they were just going to basically head towards home and find a place that they could go sit down at. And that seems to be what we're hearing from people is, you know, I really like you, really do. But if I can go a couple miles down the road and get the experience that I'm looking for, I'm going to do that.
Talking to Kevin McCann, owner of McCann's Local Meats, about the plight facing small businesses. Paint that little picture for listeners who are thinking of their favorite restaurants, their favorite bars, their favorite coffee shops, whatever the case may be, their favorite purveyors of meats and the like. In April of 2021, a good portion of the population has at least one shot in their arm, maybe two. We're talking about what feels like a normal-ish summer on the way. Festivals are coming back. But as we look around Rochester and we think and the surrounding area and the region here, what is the worst case, not just for you and your business, but for the whole landscape, Kevin?
I mean, I think that the businesses whose ownership have dealt with this head on, have been honest about it the whole time, have been creative and bold in taking steps to be able to position themselves financially and from an operational standpoint, I think that those people might be able to limp to that finish line and get there. But, you know, the truth is that right now, you know, your option is to take on debt on top of lost revenue in order to be able to make it there. So at what point, and this is, I'm sure, the decision a lot of these business owners are making is, at what point do you stop leveraging your future on the present? At what point is making that sacrifice and incurring more debt by taking on loans, whether no matter how low an interest rate they are, you still have to pay them back and the interest. So if you're going to be operating at this point for such a long time at such a decreased rate, then, you know, how do you weigh it? You know, where's your pros and cons? And I can see quite a few more still deciding to call it a day, I guess.
Talking to Kevin McCann, and let's do this. Let's take our only break of the hour, and we're going to come back and talk about how he sees, from the perspective of a small business owner, the reactions of government. And, you know, it's sort of kind of an awkward question, because having known Kevin for a number of years now and having known so many small business owners, I don't know too many small business owners whose disposition is, well, the government should save us. I mean, this is the ultimate hard work, elbow grease, do it yourself and build it, and they will come sort of mentality. But we're also in a pandemic for the first time. And so the question becomes, what's the appropriate response of government, and how does Kevin see it, and how is government matching it or not? Listeners, if you want to share any of your experiences or thoughts on the issues, concerns about small businesses and maybe what's to come, what you're doing now or what government's doing now or not doing, 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. I've already got some emails. We'll take some of those in our second half hour, connections@WXXI.org. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. So, Kevin McCann, what do you make of that idea that, you know, that government has a responsibility to act here? I will put my own sort of view of it, my own sensibility of it on the table when I say that this is not a case where automakers did not adjust to what the auto buying public wanted and all of a sudden Detroit was in trouble and needed a bailout. This is not a case of clever people who work at financial institutions convincing more and more customers to take on mortgages they couldn't handle and then chopping up those toxic mortgages into new financial instruments and convincing some rating agency to give it an A rating, all while it's a ticking time bomb and exploding. And now the banks are in trouble. This is not that. This is businesses who are facing possible closure through no fault of their own and through just the reality of a pandemic. And so when we look at what government's got a responsibility to do, for me, the calculation's changed. And if government is telling businesses, you cannot open or you cannot open anywhere near capacity, I don't know how government doesn't also say, at least at the federal level, we're going to backstop you. We got you. We are going to pull you through to the end of this, and then maybe you're back on your own. But we're not just going to tell you got to close and Darwinism takes hold here. It's hard for me to get my head around that, at least at the federal level. How do you see it, Kevin?
Well, that does seem to be exactly what the thought process is. And that is the way that one of the ways that this pandemic has been politicized. I think that, and you and I spoke about this, I believe, in August, when we kind of talked about, local, state, and federal responses to this pandemic. And I told you I thought that from a local standpoint, Rochester was seemingly doing what I thought to be a great job at trying to help small business. From a state perspective, it's not nearly as good, especially now, considering the restrictions that they're putting on that don't necessarily have a logical process to it. And then from a federal level, it's just how can we continue to fracture and divide the country in a way that, makes it look like one person is at the fault or the other person is at fault. So, is the federal government responsible for the way that our state is being mandated? No, it's not. But, the federal government is also resisting helping states like New York, who have been trying to put money into and take extra steps to keep, its residents safe. They're trying to restrict that. And, if that's where things are getting hung up, then it's ultimately going to be the small business like myself and other restaurants and retail establishments and gyms and barbershops and salons. Yep. And places of all kinds of different nature, it's gonna force them to close because they just can't afford it.
At this point, what do you want, Joe and Rochester? I'll take your call in just a second, and I see the phone ringing again. I'll grab as many calls as I can in a second, but let's just get through at least the federal part of this with Kevin. What do you think Congress should do next here, Kevin?
Well, the PPP was helpful. For us initially, it wasn't helpful because we were closed and the way that money had to be put to use was very restrictive. But once we were open and were able to utilize it in the way that it was intended to be used, it was helpful, in paying expenses for the business. That would be helpful. And again, I think I can echo from, like you alluded to, from most business owners, we're not just putting our hands out saying, gimme, gimme. But like you said, if you're going to tell us we have to close, if you're going to tell us that we have to put employees on unemployment, and then we have to also incur all of the costs of being closed, lost revenue, unemployment insurance, while maintaining fixed costs of all of the overhead with regards to lease and insurance and utilities and all of these things, then you got to meet us in the middle somewhere.
Well, Kevin, I I'd love for you to respond to the comments from a friend and a colleague of mine who I used to work with at Channel 13. He is now a news director for WCNY. He's over in Syracuse. Sean Carroll's his name. Used to be a reporter here in Rochester. And his response to this on social media was, this is going to be painful, but when we see economic disruption, we see a lot of closure, and then eventually we see new businesses rising in the place of the ones that close. And you can't just expect government to jump in and prop things up here, that there will be closures and there will be new openings in the future. And that is sort of the cycle of life in business. What do you think?
That sounds like Darwinism to me. That sounds like somebody who's probably also rooting for herd immunity to save this whole thing and let the people who are going to die, die, and then the rest of us will still be here. That to me does not sound like any kind of empathetic thought process at all.
Yeah, I also, to be fair, I mean, I like Sean and respect him, but I think what we need to be really direct with here is understanding. Let's say that that's the scenario. And right now, as Kevin mentions, with Congress kind of sitting on its hands, by the way, Reuters and others reporting that Congress is hung up on business liability protections. That's what's the reason we're not seeing a new COVID bill, because they're debating business liability protections.
And that's for places like the big business.
Yep.
That has nothing to do with us.
Nope.
As a small business.
Not a damn thing.
Amazon, that's
nope.
The big meat packing plant.
That's right.
That's those places where we were seeing large numbers of positive tests, infections, hospitalizations, deaths, spreading, and so on and so forth. And that, you know, so what, we're going to save Jeff Bezos so that, you know, the local butcher shop can close?
Yeah, I mean, for now, yeah, that's what it looks like. And that is where Congress is hung up. We'll see if that changes. What the president-elect has said is that there will be a $900 billion plus bill of some kind coming. It does not include any cash assistance like we saw the one time. Could include more PPP. We'll see. But nothing at all is imminent. I mean, we don't know. And if we end up in a situation like my colleague Sean Carroll described, you might eventually see more businesses open to replace the ones that close. You might not see an equal number, and more likely you will see chains and, you know, sort of the out-of-state, out-of-town owners with bigger money and bigger backstops, more towards economic concentration, less towards creativity, less towards, frankly, the kinds of creative small businesses that can survive just about anything except maybe a pandemic. And that's maybe where
so that
we're
means
at. Yeah.
No more Swan's Market. That
yeah.
means no more Rubino's. That means no more McCann's Meats. But that means Wegmans is just doing just fine. Danny and his clan are sitting happy.
Arnett Cafe, I'm thinking all across the city, small coffee shops. And I was about to punch a call, but before I do that, Kevin, you brought up Wegmans. Does Wegmans get a pass too often for, you know, just how they're sort of policing or not policing basic customer habits, masking, et cetera?
I think that it's been shown all across the state that I've been paying attention to that they have been. I mean, even just you go to that Pittsburgh Wegmans, and that exact same plaza is a Trader Joe's. And that Trader Joe's has been doing infinitely more with regards to restricting numbers of customers indoors, enforcing of mandates and rules with regards to masking and social distancing. And, you know, you got an organization like Wegmans that they at first told their employees that they couldn't use any kind of PPE, that they weren't allowed to wear masks or gloves. And it was only after a significant backlash that they were then allowed to. And it was only after significant backlash across the board that they took any of the steps that they did.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing seemed to be proactive. Nothing seemed to be with the well-being of its customers or its staff in mind. And, you know, now you've got that case in Auburn where they're just not going to be prosecuted, even though they're not following the letter of the law. So, you know, make your own conclusions at that point.
Joe in Rochester on the phone first. Go ahead, Joe.
How you guys doing, Evan, Kevin? How you guys doing? Hope you're all keeping it together.
Yeah.
I work I work for a food service distributor, a local one, and we're an independent. We're not like a Sysco or U.S. Foods. And, you know, my company built itself on working with independents, working with small businesses, and helping them. And, you know, my company, we service about $25 million worth of business in Rochester. So we're no small company nonetheless, but you see each and every organization you walk into, whether they're vibrant or whether they're, you know, struggling, that everyone has the same kind of concern. You know, I have customers who wait until Cuomo does a press conference before they order any food because they don't know if they're going to have a viable business after that press conference. You know, you look at it from an operator standpoint, like Evans, which I'm a huge fan of. He does a great job. Is that you got someone like Kevin who is innovative, who has a great voice in the community, has an ethos that is easy to get behind and provides a great product. But at the end of the day, you know, the way he can continue to succeed is limited by what's dictated upon him. And I feel that with the federal government not helping, with the state government doing as best they can with the means that they have, that our small businesses, the ripple effect across a whole industry is massive. You know, someone like Kevin goes out of business, that affects a supplier. And that supplier, you know, that affects the someone who has the offset of that business. So the ripple effect here is massive. And just one more point I want to make is that I feel like a lot of people haven't talked about the gains in the labor market over the last 15 years, 20 years, has been in the service sector, and primarily in restaurants. And so when you build your economy on a service sector and that sector essentially gets destroyed, what does that do to our labor market? We have little to no manufacturing in our country anymore. Everyone has a service job, you know, restaurant boom. What's going to happen after this? What's going to be the next fallback for our economy if they destroy the service sector? And, you know, I'll kind of leave it at those points there, but I appreciate your guys' time, and I appreciate all the hard work both of you do.
Thank you, Joe. And I think that is a really important point, Kevin, because I asked you how many people work for you. The number is 14. It hasn't changed. You closed, that's 14 people out of work, but there are other ripple effects that Joe's talking about. What do you think?
He's 100% correct. You asked me earlier if people understood the plight that, you know, restaurants and bars are going through. And I think I gave you that answer, but I think the thing that they don't really understand is the percentage of the workforce that is in this industry, right? Like he alluded to, we're not a manufacturing society, right? Those jobs just don't really exist. We're not a society of producers. We're a society of servicers, really. And, you know, you start to lose restaurants, those jobs in other, you know, fields and in other industries and in other sectors, they just don't exist to be able to absorb the amount of people who will then be unemployed.
Well, and just looking at who is doing well here, for everybody who is continuing to look at the Dow and the stock market as some sort of an indicator, I mean, that is now divorced from any reality. And Dan writes to say, how should we evaluate government policy here? If the government could plan to save small businesses, which are the lifeblood of the economy, and then set about doing that, what should we call it when the government does the opposite? Many of the biggest companies are at all-time highs on the stock market. American billionaires have made over $1 trillion since the pandemic started. Public transportation infrastructure is being pushed to the brink and is begging for a bailout of $12 to $16 billion after the airline industry received up to $50 billion in loans and grants within weeks of COVID's onset. This is beginning to look like a planned economic demolition. That's from Dan. I take the point Dan's making. I don't believe Republicans or Democrats in Congress want to see an economic demolition, but they are certainly offering a very direct view of what their priorities are, whether it's
whether or not they intended it.
Yeah,
it certainly does feel like businesses and capitalists of all kinds who are, you know, seeming to sell short on the economy of the United States of America are profiting, and the people who are trying to on the grassroots level small business owners who are trying to invest to prop it up are the ones who are losing.
Let me get Jack in Greece on the phone next. Go ahead, Jack.
Oh, hi, Evan. Thanks. Hey, Evan, just I haven't heard the whole conversation, but I want to just respond to a couple of points from my perspective.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was a good point on the, hey, you know, somebody could just go a mile down the road. I'm in the yellow, orange zone, and they could be in a yellow zone and get what they want there. That's true. But my wife and I, we've tried to stay informed and listen to the governor. And, you know, when Governor Cuomo addresses that, you know, it's kind of like he's stuck between a rock and a hard place in some ways. You have to draw the line somewhere. And no matter where you draw that line, somebody's going to complain about it. And I think, at least from a New York State standpoint, I can't speak for anywhere else, they're trying to be data-driven. They're looking at the numbers. They're looking at the infection. They're looking at the hospitals getting overloaded. And they're trying to make the best decisions. Yeah, it's a rough cut. But I think, you know, their priority is to try and keep people from dying. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is I would make the point is, I'm a very responsible business owner that you have. But you see, you know, we see examples of the bar owner in Staten Island and ramming his car into a sheriff or a trooper that was trying to stop them from, you know, basically people just flouting, you know, just openly that they're ignoring. You know, and it's unfortunate that we've politicized so much. But people are it's an eye-opener. This is all new to me and everybody. But that idea that, you know, the states are stuck with, they can't go into deficit spending if anybody's going to try and help. I still support my local businesses. You know, the idea that somebody's got to bail these people out. I think these people, I don't think these people should be buried because the pandemic has dried up their business. And, but the only place that can fix that is the federal level.
That's true. Yeah.
So anyway, that's my thought.
Yeah. Thank you, Jack. That's on the money. Pardon the pun, but he's right. I mean, there's not an option for the state to prevent widespread closure. There is, as Kevin McCann and others have noted, I think a logical insistence that the states at least try to be consistent. And I think Jack is bringing up an important point. Number one, it's going to be a little bit messy. There's going to be mistakes made. And the question is then, as time goes on, do those who make the policy acknowledge some of the inconsistencies? You know, for example, salons, which I think have made a really good case based on the evidence that there's not a reason to close them. And is the governor eventually going to relent? His answers on the question of salons in the last 2 weeks have been, you know, frankly, sort of nonsensical, but we'll see if that changes eventually. And then you look in Pennsylvania, Charles writes to us to point out that a federal judge there have said that the rules have been too inconsistent. U.S. District Judge William Stickman IV ruled on public gatherings in Pennsylvania. He said that nobody explained why hundreds may gather indoors to shop in larger facilities. Dozens may dine in a restaurant. Again, the larger the restaurant, the more permitted, but no more than 25 can attend an indoor lecture or a speech, or a wedding. The Pennsylvania governor's restrictions had limited outdoor gatherings to 250 people or less, indoor gatherings to 25 or less, with exceptions. As an example of disparities that the order created, the judge noted that the administration entered an agreement with a car show by allowing the event to proceed with indoor occupancy of the lesser of 250 people or 50% of the building's capacity. But that limit would be 10 times higher than the 25-person cap on other kinds of gatherings. And the judge basically said, no, too inconsistent. It's too arbitrary. It doesn't work. You have to explain it better, and there has to be consistency. That was in Pennsylvania, and I get it. I mean, I understand it. I also understand Jack's point, Kevin McCann, that there's going to have to be boundaries drawn in some way. So how do you, as a business owner, say, look, I get it. You're trying to protect lives. There has to be some limits, but here's where we think you're inconsistent.
Well, I mean, I think a perfect example of that is, why can there be a seemingly unlimited amount of people in Home Depot and Wegmans? Not to call them out again, but I'm going to call them out again. Why can there be an unlimited amount of people shopping in Wegmans, and yet we can't have customers sitting down and eating a meal inside of a restaurant, when all of these small businesses have so many less people, are taking all of the same precautions that are required of that business? Like, you know, that to me is a blaring inconsistency.
Okay. Well,
but I also agree with the caller. You know, there has to be rules made. There has to be a data-driven approach to how we come by all of this punitive action. And he's 100% right. Things are lines will be drawn. Things will be upsetting for a certain set of people and not for the other people. Mm. And, you know, that's kind of life, right? Like nothing is always fair, but, you know, gosh, when you're on this side of it, it feels especially unfair.
Yeah. And look, Kevin, I know that if there were no restrictions, if New York State said, nope, no restrictions, there's plenty of customers who would not go out to eat, who would choose to say, we're in a pandemic. A lot of what's hurting the economy is the pandemic. I mean, people are making choices to protect themselves, as they should. But
and
I do think
the scary piece of it is.
Yeah.
And the scary piece of it is that there's establishments out there that are just flat out not following rules, that are openly flaunting their decision to not follow the rules, that are advertising openly on social media that they're not going to follow the rules.
And that hurts you.
And
yeah.
That in and of itself is troubling, right? Because why would the rest of us have to follow the rules and deal with the consequences when somebody can just do whatever the heck they want and seemingly not have any punitive action? But then you read the comments on some of these advertisements on social media, and the number of people who are openly appreciative and positive for these people doing what they're doing is pretty appalling and sad.
No, it's tough. It's really tough. And I think there's a lot of people who would not go out to eat and do certain things because of the pandemic. But if the federal government is not going to backstop businesses that have been told they've got to close or be mostly closed, then, I mean, at some point, local government might just decide to say, look, if you're not going to help them, we're not going to have any restrictions. And I know that sort sounds wild to some listeners, but I don't think that's crazy. I just don't. I mean, we're talking about massive economic disruption on the doorstep here if we don't see the federal government act. Fred in Rochester, got to keep it tight. Go ahead, Fred.
Okay, I called Wegmans again recently, corporate office. And they will not, even though they've gone into the orange zone, they will not enforce mask wearing. And, yes, it does look like the big businesses are getting a lot of slack, and the small businesses are getting the shaft.
Thank you very much, Fred. This is an open invitation for Wegmans to join us. I always appreciate Wegmans. They're nice people. We communicate well with them. And occasionally they come on this program in various forms. But I know a lot of people have had a lot to say about Wegmans. So Wegmans, this is an open invitation. We'd love to have you on the program to talk about some of this stuff because there's a lot of frustration there. Kevin, in our last 2 minutes here, what's the most immediate impact that could happen that could really start to turn things, not just for you, but your colleagues in small business?
We got to be able to have people inside of our buildings at whatever reduced capacity that is. It is still exponentially more than what we're seeing right now and will mean a lot to business. You know, we talked about federal aid earlier, another round of PPP, especially because we're all closed, would certainly be helpful. I know it was helpful for a lot of businesses the first time, you know, but I think the easiest thing to do and the thing that would be most helpful is being able to have some sort of normalcy by having customers inside of our businesses.
And last minute, I know how hard you and your colleagues in small business work, but for those who scoff at the idea of federal intervention and say a bailout, you know, for to prop up small business, how does that hit you?
Unaware, probably not a business owner, probably not feeling the pinch of it because they work for some larger corporation or are, you know, independently wealthy. But again, small business owners aren't looking for a handout, right? We're not the airline industry taking a huge bailout and then buying our stock back instead of reinvesting into our business where we should have put the money. We're moms and dads, husbands and wives, people who are just trying to get by and do an honest day's work for an honest day's buck.
Well, listen, your voice carries a lot of weight, though less weight than it used to.
I'm glad. It's unbelievable.
I'm glad to hear you laugh a little. You deserve it. And the reason we wanted you on this program is because I think you speak so directly and eloquently about the challenges that you and your colleagues face. But, of course, we're going to continue to talk to you, your colleagues. This is an ongoing conversation, and yes, we are rooting for you to be there on the other end of it. Thanks for being with us, Kevin.
Thanks, Kevin.
Kevin McCann is the owner of McCann's Local Meats in the South Wedge of Rochester. They're in an orange zone, but taking orders if you want steak for Christmas Eve. It's been a rough month for them so far. And by the way, not just them, their colleagues as well. More connections coming up.